You got that Dunkin' though.
Yeah, it tastes like shit because I just got skim milk in it because I need to be skinnier. So like, I what am I supposed to do with that? Just be miserable? Like, are skinny people all miserable? I think they actually are.
Because
they have to drink like skim milk and eat like celery testicles. I don't know. Like
Celery testicles. That is the healthy part of the celery.
Right.
Yeah.
The most nutritious part.
It's the We're our own brand of miserable. Well, it's not even largely true, but it's like, it's just a shift in expectations.
For some reason, your use of the word largely just offended me. Like, I don't know why. Like, at my core, like, for a millisecond, I was, like, ridiculously and needlessly offended by your use of the word largely. I have no idea
why. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to offend you.
No, it's okay. You're forgiven.
The lion's share, or a good portion of that statement is, I guess, possibly true.
Now you're judging my portion sizes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of In the Name of Science. My name is Chris Givens, and I am joined this week, as always, by the valiant Nicole Baker. This week, we're going to be talking about human embryo editing and mice in space, so stick with us.
You know who's not going to be eating very delicious meals anytime soon? The Pharmabro Marty Shkreli. He's not going to be eating.
Well, he's going to be eating a lot of delicious dicks.
Yeah,
in prison.
Like, after he gets his teeth knocked out in prison for being a bag of dicks, he's going to be eating a bag of dicks with that toothless little punchable grin that he's got. I really enjoyed. I read Endpoints News a lot.
I don't know what
John
that is.
Carroll is the. It's like a blog for like the pharmaceutical industry and.
Oh. Okay.
And on Twitter, John Carroll, who is the author on Endpoints, or the editor, I'm not sure what his title is. He's a cool guy. He posted like three times on Twitter, maybe more, about the guilty security charge fraud charges that Martin got yesterday. And the third time he posted, he's like, and once more, just for fun or just for giggles or something like that, because he was just so delighted to be posting about this. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. So. It sort of instinctively feels good when people like him get their comeuppance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good blog to read if you're interested in the pharmaceutical industry at all. FYI, Endpoints News.
Endpoints News.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense for a name.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. Clever.
I like it.
Yeah.
Shkreli's face, it sort of looks like a 10-year-old hasn't stopped having an allergic reaction. Like,
he looks
ever.
Like the
he's just very puffy and like gnarly.
What are those two in? Yes, I agree. But those two mystery solving brothers, there's a series
the Hardy Boys?
Yeah, them in South Park when they're like constantly.
Oh, the Hardly Boys.
Yeah, the Hardly Boys though in South Park when like they keep getting clues. Like that's how like that's I'm getting a clue.
He's getting a clue.
That's how Martin Shkreli looks.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I saying his last name right? I don't give a fuck, honestly. Like Shkreli.
I think you should mispronounce it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the sound he's going to be making in prison a lot.
Oh.
When he's got dicks in his mouth. Should we like start talking about real things now?
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. We have edited human embryos.
We have.
Well, not we, but someone has.
I mean, I think when you're the benefit of being a scientist and
the
putting
royal
that
we.
The royal we, you can say we for everything. We as a scientific community have done this.
Yeah. Some nerd somewhere did this. And
yes.
Now we have all done it.
Yes. So, I mean, this has been talked about for a long time. Is it ethical to edit human embryos or to genetically edit adult humans after they've been born to cure them of diseases?
Sure.
And as you can imagine, there's all sorts of legal and ethical, just a mire of controversy around this issue.
So back up one second. What exactly happened? Like, because you have read about this.
Yeah, I was going to tell you.
Oh, okay.
Well,
then tell me. Okay, I'm so excited now.
I promise I was going to tell everybody.
Okay, great.
So a paper came out in Nature just recently, and this has been work that's been built on other work that's been going on.
Okay.
And it came from the Oregon Health and Science University, and it was led, an effort led by, I'm going to butcher the fuck out of this, Shukret Metalipov. Sorry, buddy, or ma'am. And what happened was, is they took... Well, let me back up a little bit more. So let's say you're a burgeoning young athlete. You know, you're going to the Olympics. You're a track star.
Rock and roll.
You're badass. You're in super great shape. You know, the pinnacle of health, and you're running along, and then you just fucking die. That's really unfortunate.
That is unfortunate.
So this is a thing that can actually happen.
Yes. And I feel like it's not infrequently that you hear about that in like large marathons.
Right. So sometimes what causes this is a condition called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM. And so this is a disease where it's caused by a genetic mutation in a gene called MYBPC3. And what happens is your tissue of your heart can actually get abnormally thick, which can cause just, you know, I don't exactly know the whole like mechanism of the disease and how that would actually cause you to just basically drop dead. But you can imagine if your heart tissue is too thick and maybe not functioning properly and you're putting a lot of exertion on your body.
So this is actually one of the things that one of the graduate students in my graduate lab was working on. It wasn't exactly this, but she was working on hearts and looking at abnormal thickening of them. And so I learned a little bit about cardiomyopathies along the way. And basically there are a couple ways that your heart can your heart tissue can get thicker. One of them is when you exercise, your heart muscles get stronger and a little bit thicker, but that is in a healthy sort of physiological way. And then there's another way like this, which you're talking about, where it's called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, where the cells themselves get larger without actually multiplying. But it's not in a healthy way. And the differences between the two are pretty unclear still. Mm-hmm. But basically, And also why your heart eventually fails is unclear. But like basically you have these big thick heart muscles and then eventually they just stop working and your heart like just Yikes. Isn't good anymore.
Yeah.
And so like that's why when you have high blood pressure, this sort of like ties into what happens when you have high blood pressure. Like your heart muscles get thicker in your left ventricle and eventually your heart just fails. It's not quite as instant with high blood pressure as it is like with sports related things.
So why is this so pronounced? And I mean, this article in the Washington Post specifically called out like young athletes.
Well, because this is I think the defect they edited out was a congenital defect that's mm-hmm. like in your genes. But like you can get this hypertrophic remodeling from a lot of different ways.
I guess no, I'm saying like why would athletes suffer of this more than?
Oh, I guess it's because
why would they die? I guess of this.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's because just the stress on their heart is much higher than that of a normal person. So yeah.
That's what I assumed. Because when I assume, I make an ass of myself. But I was right.
Yes, but you didn't.
I was right this time. So anyway, wouldn't it be great if we could identify that this gene was mutated, but you know, before somebody was even born, and fix that so that they wouldn't, you know, be dropped dead on their high school track or at the Olympics or something?
It would indeed be marvelous.
I think so.
Yeah.
And so what these researchers did is they took about 12 healthy female donor eggs, and they took sperm from male volunteers who had this genetic mutation in MYBPC3. And they use a technique that we've sort of mentioned before called CRISPR, mm-hmm. which is a gene editing technique. It's something that is found in bacteria that we've kind of, Jennifer Doudna and that other dude and, you know, those people, they figured out how to kind of take this system that's in bacteria that allows bacteria to kind of protect themselves from viruses and hijack it and use it to edit DNA, like at a genome in the genome, like at the level of the chromosome in cells.
Currently, the Broad Institute and Berkeley are having a huge fight about who actually invented
that. Yes, correct. And it's been going on for a few years now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they used this technology, which you can, you know, go read about in your own time. Because I ain't got time for that today. Anyway, they corrected this mutation. So they didn't edit it to be anything different. They didn't try to enhance anything because we don't actually know enough to know how to enhance genes at this point in time. And they just corrected this genetic mutation at the time the sperm was injected into the eggs. And they let these little embryos kind of develop for a second, not until like a few cells. And then they kiboshed the experiment. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, but look, it worked. Like we fixed this. Mm-hmm. I think 72% of the time they were able to fix this mutation in this gene in these embryos.
Oh, so in 72% of the embryos or in 72% yes. of the cells in the embryo?
Unclear. I can't actually read the paper. 72, it's behind a paywall.
It's probably 72% of the embryos.
Yeah. That seems...
Although, because I remember that there was... This sort of was done in China, I think,
yes,
last year.
Yes, correct. And, in 2015. Yeah.
In 2015, yeah. And yeah. It was... I think they had a lot of problems with heterogeneity in the embryos.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of concerns about off-target effects with CRISPR. And yeah. This paper states that researchers didn't notice any off-target changes, but you can't really know that unless you sequence the whole thing. So that's a little bit dubious to
notice.
Me.
what even is notice?
Yeah. I mean that's Washington Post words, notice.
Yeah.
But I assume it wasn't reported in the actual manuscript.
I mean, they probably looked for like a handful of things, but it's hard to, with a genome so big, it's very difficult to know everything, like you said, without sequencing.
Sidebar here, everyone listening out there. If anyone knows of a way to like get me access to a bunch of journals so I can actually read these papers, that would be fantastic, because I've lost my UNC hookup and I was like in live chat with like Health Science Library at UNC, like, how can I do this? And the person was like, I don't know, like literally. So that's like, can I buy a guest access or something? Because we've talked
delightful.
About this before.
Yeah.
So if anyone has a way for us to do that, that'd be great, so we can, you know, appear more educated than we actually are by actually reading these papers and perhaps become more educated. Anyway, back to the whole point of this. People are really upset about this kind of thing because, oh, we're making designer babies and we're mm-hmm. playing God mm-hmm. and you shouldn't be able to modify the genome and everything. And I'm kind of on the same side as these researchers. Like, we didn't edit anything, we corrected it. We didn't change anything mm-hmm. away from what it naturally should have been had everything gone right. I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against that. I would imagine that much of the furor is coming from people being worried about like what happens and after like three or four iterations of a particular this particular technology. Because you might start off fixing well-defined genetic events, but then, I mean, CRISPR is basically a protein that acts as scissors on the DNA,
right.
And then you have RNA that tells you where to cut.
Right.
So, like, it's not just you can use it for more than just correcting stuff. Like, you can add genes in.
It's more complicated to add base pairs or to delete base pairs, mm-hmm. but fixing is pretty well validated. But even now, like at this point, like I said, they just like, you know, sacrifice these like lab-made embryos at this point, just to make sure the experiment was working. The only way this would actually work is if you were to do in vitro fertilization. And yeah. there was like, mm-hmm, it's not mm-hmm, going to cure mm-hmm. every disease ever. Mm-hmm, it has mm-hmm. to be a well-defined genetic mutation that we know causes a disease. And it'll only go in and seek to cure, to fix that ahead of time, mm-hmm. ahead of, you know, conception, essentially. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's no way to really apply this technique to like a full blown human at this point, when
right.
there's like millions and billions of cells mm-hmm. versus like only a few when you're at the embryonic stage. So this is like worlds away from ever really going into the clinic yet. But I just think
I'm sure it's like probably 10 years before this is seen in the clinic.
Yeah.
If it gets that far.
I'm just still really stuck on the fact that we're just correcting things that were wrong instead of,
yes.
you know, we're not making, yeah. we're not, you can't like go in and like, I want my child to have blue eyes and like
right.
big tits. And like, sorry, I don't know. Maybe like some people out there are like, man, I really hope my baby grows up and has big tits.
Yeah.
I don't know what you people do. So
whatever you want for your kids,
you can't, that's like a ton of different genes that feed into that. So that would be at this point, I think, pretty impractical and impossible to identify how to like, you know, design mm-hmm. or edit, build a child that would eventually evolve these
at the moment.
Moment. So this is really about, you know, correcting.
Yes.
Correcting
yeah. And I mean, if we could, you know, get rid of congenital diseases,
like
or like
the BRCA,
weird recessives,
the BRCA gene.
Yeah,
like, what if you knew that you were going to pass that on to your child and your child could have breast cancer? I'm really on breast today for some reason. I must be like turning into a dude or something. but what if we could edit that out and you could, you know, spare your future, your offspring of having to suffer some horrible disease? I think that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. If there's a defined way to do it, then that's pretty cool. And good luck to the people who are working on that, because it is very cool.
Yeah, there's a name in this article that I just really want to say.
There's a name?
There's a name of a person in this article that just like really rolled off the tongue quite nicely.
Okay.
Ah, He's at the Salk Institute, and he's talking more about, I think his focus is more on like, how can we bring this technology to like children and adults once they're born with all like the trillions of cells that we have. But his name is Juan Carlos Ispizua Belmonte.
Whoa.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was That's a good name. So he's somebody I think that I'll keep an eye on too with regard to this kind of technology. Where is he? Yeah, at the Salk Institute. Yeah, I said that. So anyway, that's my little piece about editing genes and correcting people from, or preventing people from having to suffer horrible lives full of disease that we could have easily prevented if they're like overly religious and ethical, you know, people of the world would just let us do this. Thanks.
Yeah. I think properly researched and deployed with the proper ethical controls, this is wonderful technology.
With maybe some kind of governmental, like, you know, health authority regulations surrounding what you can and can't do.
Like maybe the FDA?
Yeah, or whatever, or like health authority, what have you, around the world, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah. It'd work out nicely.
It would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I actually chatted with my dad a little bit about this, and his biggest concern was just like not what we're going to do with it in the United States, but like what it will be done with it in countries where there are much more lax ethical standards. And yeah, I mean, I think that's legit, but I'm not sure. I'm also not sure it means that you should stop the development.
Yeah, it's not one of those things where like everybody should be penalized because some people are assholes, you know?
Yeah. It has the potential to really screw stuff up.
Rein in a really cool kind of apocalypse situation. So like, if we're going to like be negative about it, like maybe we'll have several races of humans, like the genetically modified ones, and we'll like be fighting against the normies.
Oh, so it's going to be like some sort of a World War Z situation.
Yeah. I think, you know, it might stir things up a little bit and be a little bit fun. So it's not all bad.
Well, you can come over here if you want. Maybe have Carl bring his guns and when the zombie apocalypse hits.
Sure.
Yeah.
We'll just like record and spit this out into the ether, like news updates from your window.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The internet will probably still work.
Probably. Yeah. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Everything will be fine. It's just there'll be zombies.
Right.
It'll be whatever. Yeah. So we'll just have to sort of, you know, watch over your back when you leave your house or whatever.
Sure, it'll be. I kind of do anyway at this point in time. So
yeah, or maybe we'll go live in space
with mice.
Well, would you like to?
Because
you can.
Our last episode, we were talking about jerking off mice in space. Not Mike. I don't know anyone named Mike. or jerking them off before we take their ejaculate into space. But now, apparently, we found out that actual mice have lived in space.
They have lived in space. Yes. What I find to be a delightfully named piece of technology, the Italian Space Agency has designed something called the MDS, which stands for Mouse Drawer System, which allows you to take mice into space and have them live there for a little while, and then you can bring them back and do
studies. And like a chest of drawers, like a bureau, like what?
Yeah, it's an antique like mahogany bureau that you just sort of nail to the wall.
There's some straw in it for the mice to bed.
Exactly. And then they just sort of drink out of an open cup of water. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real technologically
advanced. The water, there's gravity, there's artificial gravity, I assume.
Yeah, on the ISS, of course. Yeah, a total artificial gravity. they're able to just, you know, live like normal. It's pretty amazing. In reality, the MDS is a cube about like with a side length about the size of a human torso. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty bulky cube, and it can hold. It has cage space for 6 mice.
Okay. They're in drawers that you can pull out.
More or less, yeah.
I'm envisioning like a little storage device that I would get from Target to like put makeup in or something. But instead of like makeup, it's mice.
It's sort of like it is a little bit like. Like technologically advanced like storage solutions.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is, in fact, because this is in fact a storage solution for like other live things that you can't really control. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of cool because like it's like this all in one mouse living system, and it sort of regulates the amount of water they can get. It regulates their air quality. It gives them food.
Are they floating?
Yeah, they're floating.
Oh, that's so cute and terrifying. The mice don't know what's happening. They don't know what
they're
outer
just like,
space
is. What the hell is even going on right now? Yeah, no, they're floating around. Yeah. It's kind of fun. No, it's basically like the cages are probably It looks like there are probably like 4 or 5 inches on the short side, and then maybe like 6 or 8 inches on the long side.
So they can push off the walls to get around.
I think
a
so.
Bit. Okay.
And what's also kind of neat is that they have it's like one big chamber fits 3 mice, and then you can kind of divide that into 3 cages okay. for mice, and then so they can sort of smell the other mice next to them, and I assume they can
and
communicate
I imagine
somehow.
There's turds floating too.
Yeah, what was not clear in the paper that I read about this was how the poo is dealt with, because mm-hmm. mice are just little poo machines.
Yeah,
and I mean they just don't stop pooping. And I mean I can understand how the pee is dealt with. I mean you can just like regulate the air and you know filter that out from the air, I suppose, or whatever. Yeah. Or maybe even that you have absorbent pads somewhere that just like soak it up and then it's removed somehow.
Sure.
Like that makes sense, but like the poo just sort of floats. I guess I don't know. I hope
like
it's
imagine
big enough.
That. Imagine yeah. in this room that we're in right now.
Just poo.
There's just like our poop is just floating around us and we're batting it away.
Yeah. I'm not super excited about that. Although I think, you know, I think mice eat their own poo sometimes. So
maybe they're okay with it.
I don't know. Maybe.
I hope so. This sounds cruel.
Yeah.
So they're in space. What's the point? Just to study a biological life form in space for a long period? What's the...
Kind of, yeah. I mean, so they're... ever since people have been going into space and back out of space, physiologists have been studying what happens to the human body in microgravity. And there's kind of a lot that happens. I mean, the sort of the most famous things that happen are... You lose muscle mass just all over your body, which is why astronauts, when they're up there, they exercise like a lot. It's so they can try to keep up their muscle mass, even though they're in microgravity. Along with that loss of muscle mass, you get a loss of bone mass. So you essentially get like minor osteoporosis when you're in space. Well, also like your heartbeat changes a little bit too. Hmm. Like you're like because the way that blood gets pumped to our lower limbs is partially aided by gravity, and there's no gravity to help that out. Like
yeah,
you actually
yeah, yeah.
get like your faces get a little fatter and your torsos get a little fatter while while your legs get a little thinner. And it's
terrible.
Because there's just not enough blood or there's just like yeah.
It's that's the opposite of what I need. I'm not going to space.
I mean, but there's like exercise bikes and stuff too. So then that's how I guess you keep the blood flowing and just making stuff happen. Also the artificial gravity, which may or may not exist. Almost certainly doesn't. Definitely doesn't exist.
Definitely doesn't.
But yeah, so they wanted the mice that they sent up there initially were to study the effects of bone loss. So they actually sent wild type mice and they sent transgenic mice up there, like normal mice and transgenic mice into space in the mouse drawer system. And
for the transgenic mice,
Mice were a type of gene inserted that is supposed to help aid with bone loss, basically. And so they wanted to see if there was an effect of that, and
like prevent it or aid it
if they would prevent bone loss. And so yeah, they sent the mice up and they flew into space, and not all of them made it, which is kind of sad. The other thing I was unable to understand was whether the mice are like secured at all during liftoff or anything.
I assume,
or if they're just in their drawers, like kind of sliding around or whatever.
Like, wow, what a ride!
Yeah, I mean, like one of them died on the way up, I think, because it had a big lesion in its spine. So like they think maybe it like, broke its back or something during liftoff. Yeah, so like that's why I was wondering like whether these things are secured or not. So anyway, the two of the control mice died and one of the transgenic mice died, but between the two groups, such as they are, they did see that there was actually a little bit of bone loss prevented by that transgene. Anyway, mice have been grown in space using the mouse drawer system. I think it's also worth mentioning that on like NASA pages where they talk about research like this, they have this whole section called OPNOM, which stands for Operations Nomenclature. But I was just really excited that it's called OPNOM. So go NASA. Thank you for your awesome sort of, I guess, not really abbreviation because this is just like sort of two words being cut short. There's probably a name for that I'm just not getting
right
now.
Yeah, like some technical name.
Concatenation?
Yeah, concat.
Or something like that.
Truncating and concatenation.
Truncation, there we go.
Truncating and concatenating two truncations. Yes. I don't know. So now I'm thinking, like, okay, so is this this transgenic mouse? Are these genes conserved in humans? And now, can we play God and use the technology that I was talking about, use the technology of manipulating the genome with CRISPR as an embryo, and we could breed astronauts from the womb.
A special race of space-resistant humans.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
At least bone loss-wise.
Let's get the bioreactors ready, see what we can come up with.
All right, sounds good. I'll prepare for, you know, any kind of alterations that end up, you know, negatively affecting our quality of life, like making a zombie. So
yeah, well, so when the zombies happen, we'll send the
space resistant humans to space to find a new place to live.
Exactly.
We just have to make it until they come back and tell us where to go.
Oh, I don't think we're gonna make it.
Oh,
yeah. We're just gonna send like the chiseled jaw people of the world into space.
Right.
The space resistant chiseled jaw people into space.
Right.
And they
that's definitely part of it. Like every man that we breed specifically for space should have a chiseled jaw.
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Very strong jaw.
Yeah. Profile. They'll basically be like a cartoony version of like what the original astronauts looked like. Mm-hmm. They're all just like cocky jet pilots wearing aviators.
Well, I'm glad we sorted all this out. And you know, we could also design a larger mouse drawer system for these clones that we're going to have
A people drawer system.
A people drawer
system. It's sort of like what we already have.
And we've already learned we need to secure them so they don't break their back on the way up into space.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's kind of what a space shuttle is in the first place, right? It's like a people drawer system. Like they have little sleeping bags that the people sort of slide into to go to sleep.
Fair enough. Okay.
Although maybe we can just really make it a people drawer system.
Yeah,
they'll be asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, shit. Okay.
And then Charlton Heston will crash back into Earth and get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape. Oh, you blew it up. Damn you all to hell. Whatever. Basically, we're writing the plot to Planet of the Apes right now.
I think we are.
Yeah.
Well.
And what you may not know is that deep in the Constitution of In the Name of Science, the lengthy constitution we have written, it stipulates that whenever a podcast comes back to the plot of Planet of the Apes, we must end it.
That is true. That's like the third amendment that we wrote after we revised our constitution the 100th time. So.
Yeah. And Ben Franklin put his John Hancock on it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like Ben Franklin put his dick on it. And we're done. Bye, Nicole.
Say bye, Nicole.
Bye.
Thank you all for joining us this week on In the Name of Science. This podcast was recorded and edited by Nicole Baker and Chris Givens. Our music was performed by Carl Bernock. And you can find us on the web at nameofscience.org and at ITNOScience on Twitter. Hope to see you all out next week.